Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is July 18th, 2005. This session is What is Spiritual Direction, Spiritual Companionship? Presented by Spiritual Director Marlene Muller in the Creekside Room, disc number MUM-2005-01. Let's listen in.
Spiritual direction is so related to prayer. We'll pray for a little bit at the beginning, and then I'll just talk a little bit about spiritual direction, companionship. And then, since it's a familiar experience to some of you, I bet, and maybe not to others, we'll have a chance to talk and share experiences, ask questions, give comments, whatever you want to do. So let's just find a relaxed, alert, comfortable position. I know it's kind of siesta time, so if your neighbor snores, you have permission to kind of poke him or her. Let's just notice our breath for a minute. Fast, if it's slow.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. Come on over, just begin. We're just starting with some breathing. So you can breathe in. And you can notice how your body's feeling at this point in the day, what you've done with it earlier in the day, and if you can relax any parts that are tense, if you notice, that's great. If you can't, that's fine too. Remembering that we're not in charge of prayer, but prayer is always a gift. Recall your desire for God. Just a simple desire that is somewhere within you that you want to remember and maybe form into a prayer. It could be a prayer of longing that has a word attached to it, or it might just be a gentle smiling toward the divine, or it might only be a wordless wanting to want God and not being at that place right now. But however that silent prayer forms in you in a simple way, just let that come up and pray it as it's right for you. Prayer is the breath in our lungs and the blood from our hearts. Our blood flows and our breathing continues without ceasing. We are not even conscious of it, but it never stops. O Creator, we open ourselves to you in this moment to love as best we can right now. We're grateful for your love and presence with us. Amen. I feel a little quiet. met with a spiritual director about 15 years ago in Seattle through the Ignatius Spiritual Exercises for Everyday Life. And one of my first thoughts was, one person's going to direct me. It's not going to happen. Because I have so many plans on my own. They're not going to get through. And that didn't have to be the case in this situation, but I had to keep resisting that. Instead, it was a more open time when I realized there's a lot of ways that I'm directed, that we're all directed by God, that the Spirit leads us. Of course, you know, there's music, and there's dance, and there's good books, and there's great friends, and there's your own experience in worship, there's what other people say to you. So spiritual direction, companionship is only one aspect of it. And again, as I'm talking about this, I'm acknowledging inside, if not outside, that you all have your own experiences too, and I'm just sharing from one viewpoint. So hold on to your thoughts if you have any about what I'm saying. I'd be interested in hearing them in the group later. So with that in mind, what do we do with spiritual direction, and why do we call it spiritual direction in the first place? It's an old name from a long time ago. Direction you could trace back to different places. Most people look at it, the tradition coming in the Judeo-Christian faith from the desert in Egypt. And I noticed in the BC there are some pictures, some photographs in the back wall taken of a, I'm not sure if it's a white, I don't know, it's a Coptic monastery or something, but in Egypt. And that was the time, you may remember, when the mothers and fathers, the desert mothers and fathers gathered out there on their own, but then they drew other people to them just by being there with God. And so that's one way that we can trace spiritual direction back to them. And you can look at scripture and you can read books, and there's lots of different ways that you can find, weave yourself back into, where does this come from? What is this based on? And people have different names for it. The spiritual midwife, some people say, where there's a kind of a sacred nest prepared for you to come and talk with someone, or a guide, a spiritual guide. Different people have different ways of talking about it. I like companion because it really emphasizes that you're coming alongside someone, and that the control, sometimes called the locus of control, is not in the director, but it's always in the other person. It's not as if the director knows how God is speaking to you, but you're listening, and this person's listening with you to how God might be inviting you, or how the Spirit might be bringing you deeper into the path that God has for you. One of the things that we tend to not notice so much, maybe I don't, and others I've heard don't either in our regular lives, is where we're resistant to God. And I myself am so ready to say, oh, I'm not resistant in that way. But when it's in a loving, easy atmosphere, I'm more open to saying, well, I guess I am kind of fighting that. And that's something that a director can help, or a companion help us with, is to, in a loving, gentle way, notice, gosh, why are you digging your feet in? And do you think maybe you might be invited to just open your hands a tiny bit and not keep them so clenched? And for me, it's comes out of in a way, the Lord's Prayer, the part, Thy will be done. As I direct folks and directed by the people I go to, it's a continual coming back to, how am I open to God? How am I willing to God, for God, in this moment? And not that sharp, here I am, here God is, but how are we together moving? Or if not moving, standing still and waiting. Or if not standing still and waiting, in the dark and just being. And all of that is a mystery, which is what I love. All these words I'm saying, I don't really know. There's a wonderful not knowingness in spiritual direction and being a directee, that, and being a person of faith that says, who knows? Only the divine knows and the Creator knows. And I'm a willing participant as much as I can be. So it's that great big mystery that can't be explained but can only be experienced. And there's a quote that I like by Tilden Edwards. He says, the point of the time of spiritual direction, is not great clarity, but great willingness for God to be God in all the unpredictable and unknowable ways that God lives in and through us. I like that. I like that spaciousness that communicates. One of the things in spiritual direction that we can look at that is often helpful to do is to consider how we're praying and how God might be asking us or giving us new ways to pray. And remembering that everything is all-inclusive, that it's not like I'm coming to spiritual direction, bringing my religious life, but I'm bringing my work life, I'm bringing my family life, I'm bringing my downtime, my uptime, my hyperness, my mellowness, my everything. It's all part of spiritual direction and companionship. Some of the more contemporary people that comes to mind for me mostly, that's kind of championed the cause, although he's dead now, but through his writing still, is Thomas Merton, who was kind of like the most popular, it seems, monastic around and in just recent history, contemporary history. And there are many others. And like I said, there are many books now. Even 10 years ago, there weren't that many books to read, but there's a lot of them. And I think that's one of the, maybe the rocky parts of this whole movement in spiritual direction is, what are we doing really? Are we sitting around psychologically figuring out how we are with God? Or are we sitting around getting fixed by a more pastoral person? Or are we sitting around willing in our brokenness to open up to God as best we can? And that is a more, for me, my understanding, a contemplative way of being with God. A very simple, empty, here I am. And that's kind of why I brought the begging bowl from the bookstore here, to remind us that we come empty, and there's plenty of space for God to come in and fill us as we wait with another person and look around at the landscape and see what's going on. So that's mostly all that I have to say, and I wonder if you have any comments or any experiences that you want to share for good or not so good that you've had in companionship with direction, or just questions, comments, thoughts, observations, anything that comes up for you about it. Why you'd never do it. Why you would.
Well, I guess I've never done it. I've known a spiritual director, a parent in my kid's school, and have been intrigued by the concept, which would go beyond my everyday church experience, and to have another advocate, you know, as part of my walk.
Yeah.
I guess I'm still a little murky as to exactly what would take place during the course of a few sessions and maybe even more elementary than that, how would I find a spiritual director?
Maybe
that'd be the first or second question. If you don't mind just speaking just generally.
Yeah, thanks for those questions. It depends on your community where you would find one. There's official ways to find them in communities where there might be a service that matches you up that you can kind of talk around and find. And afterwards, if you want, in your area, I can maybe give you some suggestions, maybe. And then another way, which I kind of tend to like more, is you talk and ask someone else if they've seen anyone or know of anyone. It seems, well, in my experience and understanding, spiritual directors are it's a gift that's given. I mean, now there's lots of training programs, and a lot of people say they're spiritual directors, and there's coaches, and there's this and that. And it's really up to each person to discern if the person they're meeting with is a gifted director for them. Then it might be a person that they wouldn't expect to be a good fit, or it might be someone that is a good fit. That's part of the mystery, but there's the giftedness that I would look for if I was looking for a spiritual director, if I experienced that gift. And then in terms of what happens in the session, that can be really different depending on the person that's leading. But a lot of times it starts with some silence or a prayer, and then kind of whatever you want to talk about. It's not therapy. It's not therapy in a couple different ways, and the books can get into that a lot too. And so it's not you being figured out or it's not about my knowledge or my great training that defines the time. But it's, so what's been going on with you? How are things in your prayer time, prayer life? Do you have a prayer life? Do you hate prayer? And why? Why is that? What is prayer for you? And what has prayer been like? And what are your images of God like? And not all of them. Not all of them. But as they come up in that space, in that tender place where we're vulnerable, and then we ask those and look at them. It could be that you would bring a real struggle, something that's been really heavy on your heart, or something you're going through, or a developmental stage that you're working through. But the director's intent, in my experience and understanding, is to always be listening to God with you, and to, at least for me, praying, help me, help me, help me. And praying for you. God, what do you want to say to this person at this time? And so however the conversation goes or doesn't go, if it's silence, if it's, let's draw something. So all of those. Does that answer
the question? And then the frequency typically?
Yeah. It can be once a month, and it often is. I kind of feel that. Why does it have to be once a month? Why can it not just be once, whenever you feel right about it? And it might be once a month in a regular thing, but I don't think there's any formula. You know how we manage everything we kind of get our hands on and want to develop it all? I feel bad for spiritual direction that can't remain the wilderness that I think God intends for it to be. And so that's one of my hopes, that it can be in there. But once a month can be really nice. Right for you. Yeah.
I'd like to share some experience that as directee. I'm a professor and I was going to do some research on the Benedictines. And I decided to go down to the nearest women's monastery, and I had a friend who introduced me to someone. It was just research, but I'm a church lady. So you get into any Benedictine monastery, there's a sign over the door that says, "Seek God." And you sort of just treat you in a way that lets you think, well, you may think you're doing research. And then the mutual friend who had sent me there, who was a sister in another congregation, another religious order, must have said something about me, I don't know, to a woman who was there, who writes about spiritual direction, a very good spiritual director. And she had satisfied 2 hours a day to talk to me for those 5 days. Well, it was the first week of that. And it was just such a powerful thing, you know, and I didn't know what I was getting into. But I would say the main, and I've seen, and now I'll go back and see her when I need to, which isn't very often, really, because basically she sent me back to my own life, saying, yeah, you have the spirituality of a Lutheran mom, you know. You don't need monastic spirituality or different, you know, you sort of have that. And it sort of is affirming in that way, but I think the main thing she did for me, taught me, was a couple of, almost say prayer techniques, that helped me to turn off the busyness in my mind. That's the main thing. So that I'm not, when I am trying prayer, sit still, that there's, can't say, okay, now, be quiet, I don't need to think about what I need at the grocery store, or what I have to do tomorrow.
How do you do that?
She was doing a group on centering prayer, which is a method, which now, you know, I sort of have a book on that I can go to that has helped in that way. And this is the woman who wrote the book. It's in the bookstore called Thoughts Matter, which is about, so these desert monks in the olden days, they used to go out to the desert, they'd leave behind, you know, sexual temptation and gluttony and wealth, and they'd go off and be pure. Well, it turns out that was all still in their heads. You know, and so what kind of discipline do you do to, so simply, for instance, they start with food. Don't eat between meals. Because you're not going to. You're just going to eat, you know, like and then stop thinking about it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so you can do some with your body. That's just an example of that.
Just if I was eating ice cream,
I just had ice cream. I just had ice cream too, but I mean, it's just, it depends on what you're thinking. And like, so for me, frankly, my own inner life would tend to be cluttered up by issues that I would call consumerism. So like one Lent, I gave up looking for a new house for Lent. Really, seriously, you know, I just wasn't. Or I do not shop on Sunday. So just little, like, what is it? They're helping me to identify what is it that is going on.
It's hard when you're in America. It really is.
But then you find a rule of life, just as the Benedictines have their own rule of life, and my rule of life is no shopping, things like mm-hmm. that. And so it helps a little bit. It helps that at least I'm not sitting in church thinking, okay, but I have to give up the groceries. Mm-hmm. Seriously. Yeah, I have a friend who says, you know, it costs the church St. John's by the mall. You know, you can go there because it's really easy to go. So that's just me. I don't be friend, you know, to other people, whatever. But just to identify what are your issues that are kind of getting you. The other thing she would want to say is, well, you say you want to get closer to God, but is there anything in your life that really is involved in that's going to keep you? Or is she and I are having an affair? You know, or are you... You know, are you embezzling? You know, is there anything in your life that's going to just block that? And if there is, you know, just stop that. If you say you're serious about things, that was her approach. Mm-hmm. So there are certain things about helping me figure out how to change my physical life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That would help me in a spirit in a way that is. And I'm not saying I'm that great or anything, but you
sure.
know.
Yeah, and I think, like you're saying, a spiritual director can provide or offer up some ideas as mm-hmm. they listen to you of ways that you might perceive that God might be inviting you that take away that effortfulness, like I've got to achieve this, whether it's something in the world or secular that we would label that way, or if it's something in our faith that we're still trying to be effortful about getting to. Like, I really want to achieve a good prayer life. And it can be looked at as, well, maybe it's about consenting to prayer rather than getting that from God. And that's mm-hmm. a person who's sitting there and sort of landed, and even though you might still be scurrying about, can help guide that process a little bit with God's grace.
I'm reading a book called Ragamuffin Gospels, and I recommend it. But in it, it says that think about prayer as you have a little child that's just got the first coloring book and their first crayons, and they brought you their first picture, and you know, it had zigzags on it and everything's a different color, and you say, oh, it's wonderful, it's a masterpiece. You just love it so much because they brought it to show it to you. That's how God is about our prayers. Okay, well, our prayers might not be anything like anyone wants you to, but any prayer that you bring to God, he's happy about.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we pray, I think, in ways we don't even realize we're praying. Yeah. It can be fun to discover. Mm-hmm. Good, I'm not as bad as I thought I was. Yeah. Other ideas, other ways that you've been surprised by, like you're saying, I'm on the Lutheran mom is my spirituality. Other ways that you've discovered or sort of had revealed to you your own faithfulness, or either through direction or on your own, or ways God has directed you outside of spiritual direction.
We had a canon, and I live in the Middle East, and so I go to Anglican church. So they had a canon come in and talk to us about the temple inside of our soul, and to do the what you were talking about, this inner work that you keep working yourself farther and farther inside that temple. And you do that, a lot of this other stuff falls away as you work on entering that very sacred place in your soul, which you feel it down here, even though your soul is probably in your brain. Mm-hmm. But it was a very neat way of centering yourself. Mm-hmm. That you have an altar inside of you that you want to go into that very sacred place.
So an image that was helpful mm-hmm. for you to occupy your mind while you... Yeah, that makes sense. Hmm. Other observations?
I've never done women have a clue what a spiritual director is. And so, but they, for me, I really thrive on the daily devotions every morning and in the evening, and I do group devotions once a week for seniors, and we learn so much from senior citizens. And that's where a lot of my growth comes from.
Yeah.
People with strong faith having devotions with them. You got me to start the devotions out, and I'm going to do the devotions, but what comes back is always amazing.
A way to be surprised that you don't expect that it comes mm-hmm. back and finds you, yeah.
Sometimes I wonder if spiritual direction is becoming so popular because people have these other groups as often.
Oh, huh.
No, like, those are spiritual companions, even elders to one another and now to you.
You know, your adult Sunday school class right. in church, and you get that
yeah.
off of other people, and you're learning. Hopefully, opening and closing the prayer.
Yeah.
Just any group prayers you're praying out loud together from your heart.
Yeah.
That's just a huge growth.
I wonder, too, if spiritual direction has become more popular because as the emptiness kind of piles up inside us when we're promised so much fulfillment that it's harder and harder to ignore it. So it kind of drives us into a more intense, direct, what is happening, what's going on? So I wonder that sometimes. Because when you think about it, what is, I think it seems kind of hard. Go to somebody that you don't know and sit there and start talking about yourself. I don't know. It might be easy, but it might be terrible. And I did go to someone once who I had heard a good recommendation about and thought it was going to be great. It was horrible. And I needed to, the next session, say, sorry, but this isn't a good, I didn't want to say fit, because that sounds like a shoe, you know, but it just didn't work right, and so I had to say no thanks. And it was fine with that, but it's not the end all be all, for sure. It's one way.
You find some people seeking clarity in vocational discernment, is that?
Yeah.
Sometimes another direction.
Yes. And I think that can be really helpful to be able to sit down and really not just think through, but have someone who's leaning is toward listening to God's call. That, I think, is not as easy to come by in our culture in informal ways. Although, for me personally, I'm not as big on discernment as being like there's different ways of discernment, Ignatian discernment, and all different kinds of techniques you can kind of use to discern things. And I think those can be helpful for people. I haven't found them particularly helpful for me. And again, I think it's a way sometimes we tend to want to manage. Oh, here's what spiritual direction is. It's a method, but it's really not a method, because God is not a method. God is beyond methods. Those might be used by the creator of methods, but the method is not God. So, but yeah, I think, yeah, in its place, that's wonderful and helpful. I don't know if you're familiar with the Ignatian spirituality, but the idea of consolation and desolation has been really meaningful for me, and God used that a lot in my life. What to do with those times when you're experiencing either of those, and what does that mean? Very simple. And there's really not that much to say about it. In some ways, God is just very simple. We don't really need all those books and all that stuff. We just do the best we can and then live our lives. On the other hand, it is helpful to sit down and what does that mean? And why is that way? And to know we have all these people like Teresa of Avila and John of the Cross. Even Teresa of Avila was saying, no, you got to make sure you don't get a bad spiritual director. There's nothing worse than a bad spiritual director who's telling you what to do all the time. And that's neat to be connected to the, that's a friend. That's a soul friend back there. So. Any other questions?
I haven't had any experience with a spiritual director, so this was very intriguing to me to mm-hmm. just, you know, see what it was all about. My prayer life was like this. I mean, I need to just say that because it is a truth, because depending on how disciplined I am or how busy I think I am, but We are from Minnesota. I live on a farm, and we have a field road that I do 2 miles on, and that is the best time for me. The absolute best for me. I mean, it might not be for someone else, but I have found that if I praise God first, praise Him for who He is, worship Him, begin my prayer thoughts that way, and then go down to thanking Him. There's so many things. You know, the day might be rotten, but there always is something to be thankful for, just for life itself. If nothing, if you can't think of anything else, you're still alive, although sometimes I suppose you think you should be when things are so bad. But really, if you really stop to think, there really is beauty and thankfulness and everything. Then to go to the confession part, because if you confess what you have messed up with, and just pour it out to God and say, God, I messed up. Forgive me. I know you've already done that, but I'm sorry. And then go on to your supplications with what you'd like to do with your life. I usually start with my family, the things that I want. I'm in a blended family, so there's 8 children, and there's 7 spouses, and then the 15 grandchildren. And I think about their needs, and my husband's and myself and whoever else. And it's if I could do that faithfully every day, and when I do that, it's amazing. I know that sounds like a method, but at the same time it's so rewarding. So spiritual direction, I'm sure I can learn more from a spiritual director, but that's my experience. I have so much to learn yet. I've got a long way to go.
Well, it sounds like God has really given you your prayer, your field prayer.
My field prayer, yeah.
Yeah, that's what's given to you. Right?
But, there's all those things that probably I've asked a long time ago for God to forgive me for, but, they creep up again in the little thoughts and what have you. And it's a journey, and it's...
Yeah.
So, maybe prayer... Our director would be helpful in that.
Yeah. If that's given, if that's right, it's more, God is about freedom. God isn't about, okay, now I want you to move in this tight, rigid way, but does this seem natural and right and genuine and authentic for you at this time, or is this something you're putting on yourself and you have to do in the name of spirituality? And gosh, the way you describe your prayer, it sounds wide open as the space that you pray it in, doesn't it?
Well, and at the end, to say, Thy will be done, what is His will for all of these supplications? I may want this, but, it may not be the right thing, because my mind is so finite, and His is, I always think of Him looking down at us with, He's with us, I understand that, but we're walking in a maze, and He sees the whole thing from above, and He goes, okay, this is the way you should go, but, we can't quite figure it out sometimes, or I can't anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I will be done.
Yeah.
Are there a lot of spiritual directors around? In every, I don't know any in my area, but
yeah.
How is... that we can connect, or do they go through a schooling, or what happens?
It depends on the area, it depends on the person. Sometimes I feel like there aren't any gifted spiritual directors anywhere, and then it suddenly seems like there's a whole bunch. And there are programs, and they vary in what the programs are like, and directors vary in how professional they see the role, or how more as a gift. For example, the Jesuits, who traditionally offered spiritual direction for many, many years, don't charge any money. They're in a place where they can do that. They're cared for by the community. But other folks feel that it's a service they need to charge for, so they might say, pay as you can, or $20 to $40 or whatever. And then it really depends on your area as to how you get in touch with folks. You can go through churches. A lot of times the Catholic Church might be able to guide you, not just to Catholic directors, but to Protestant ones also. Or maybe some of the rest of you are familiar with ways that you've connected with spiritual directors.
There is a website.
Hmm. Spiritual Directors International, you mean?
Maybe.
Yeah.
People often become, I'm sort of a senior professor at a church-related college, and so sometimes the younger students, people come and say, mm-hmm. Can you come over to find a spiritual director? They've heard of this.
Yeah.
My concern about it is that how, especially when you're reading people, mm-hmm. and maybe even all of us, I know, when is it therapy that's needed? Mm-hmm. When is it spiritual direction? Mm-hmm. And if someone is really sunk, you know, in a dark place, mm-hmm. is that because they've forgotten how to pray? Or is there some perhaps chemical problem or some real life circumstance that, well, may be great to have a spiritual director,
right.
but also should be helping them get some other help?
Right. And that's where I do believe, not so much in training, but I guess you can use the word training, but in someone who has a good psychological background and basic understanding of human development, a good theological background, whatever that orientation is, that they're, that the director is in a supervision relationship where they, number one, they're getting spiritual direction on their own, and that they're in a relationship with someone who they can respond to confidentially. All this is confidential. But that they can come to, and not using the person's name, talk about what's happening. And especially talking about what's happening within them as they sit with the person in direction. So I think that is our greatest gift, is to pay attention to what is happening in me as I am with God with this person. Am I sensing some kind of deeper thing that I can't handle? Do I need to refer them? That is really important that a person knows that. And that's, I think, obvious to me and to you, but it's really important to keep saying that, I think. And I believe the person, I'm saying a lot of I believe this, I believe that, like, you know, I'm the NLBI, you know, I'm just one person, obviously. But I also believe that the spiritual director needs to be in a peer group where they are back and forth, with still not revealing any of the information of the people that they meet with, but that they are constantly, monthly, really, being with people who are prayerfully listening to them talk about their own experiences in direction and what's happening with them in the experience. There's also, you know, a tradition that's sort of gotten tossed around now, the Dark Night of the Soul, sort of flipped off as, oh yeah, I'm having a bad day, it's the Dark Night of the Soul. But the Dark Night of the Soul is something that we can learn a lot about from the folks in the past, especially John of the Cross and Teresa of Avila, and that can be seen as either depression or a clinical depression, or it can be seen as a way God is moving in a person. And it takes wisdom, and I think age, and discernment, and a deep, deep willingness and trust in God, and an acknowledgement that you really don't know what you're doing, but God knows. To know, to be able to help a person to decide what is happening. I think all those pieces fitting together ensures the safety of the other person, the directee, and it's not just some crazy, you know, we're just getting together for the heck of it and talking about God, which is okay unless you're saying this is an intentional time while I'm coming together. And if you're charging money, that makes a difference. So I think all those are important. And in saying all that too, God can work. The divine is divine and can work. And it's also to say that there can harm can happen and pain can result from things that aren't tended to and taken care of. So, anything else around that specifically? Maybe that's a reason some of you would never want to go into it.
You talked about this begging bowl here. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, I should have brought my little thing. Now I bought two begging bowls. Maybe I should be giving the money away instead of buying the begging bowls. But Yeah, there's a neat little thing you can get in that is more specific and clear, but it's from that tradition that monks had and still do in some places where they would go and beg, and that they would receive each day what they needed, not unlike the old manor in the desert routine. And but that until they had an empty bowl, they weren't in a place where their bowl could be filled up. And so much of what we do in our culture is to stay full so that we never have to acknowledge the pain and the emptiness and to enter into that. And so we leave the begging bowl open and unfilled, kind of to help us not be so afraid or so resistant to God being there in our helplessness.
Do spiritual directors, it seems like there are some things to be learned from the Eastern traditions of meditation and all that. I mean, is that part of the training at all, or is it an individual thing as to whether you explore that in terms of either with a person or just in general as part of your training?
Yeah, I think that kind of depends on different programs, but it seems to me, and I've looked at a lot of them and been in one of them, that actually been in one and a little bit of another one, but that an ecumenical and sort of a deeper, not only like there's Presbyterians and there's Lutherans, but that it's far-reaching. You know, it kind of keeps opening up in Eastern and then beyond that. And that those programs seem to be ones where, in my experience, there is more spaciousness and more room for God to be. But yeah, I would say that is there. And then you can find a person that has more of that inclination and their own experience. And maybe some of you know this better than I do, but there are, I know, in different faith traditions, the spiritual director, there's this startsa, how do you say that in the Russian Orthodox tradition, the sort of the desert person out there that goes around. There's the Hebrew tradition. There's, would anyone be able to say the, because I've heard before people, it would probably be helpful if I could say this better to you, but there are in other faith traditions. I don't think it's so much the masters. God knows, because I'm a master, but it's more of my strength is made perfect in weakness. And so those people that have been around a while and suffered some, no matter what faith tradition they come out of, they seem to be gifted in some way to accompany others. Does that answer your question?
Interesting way, yes.
Yeah, kind of wrapped that way. Yeah. I'm not that linear. Oh, my strength.
Yeah, I think the Eastern traditions are an interesting way to get into to a lot of different things. For me, I had some friends that were Buddhists, so I got into meditation from that standpoint, and then found out about centering prayer and contemplative prayer. Sometimes you find it out about some of these treasures in your own faith through exploring other religions, especially other religions, because so much of that is very much in common between those different religions.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's really true. Some of the literature, like The Cloud of Unknowing, and some of those books from way back also speak in a roundabout way of spiritual direction that we might, coming out of a Western tradition, wouldn't recognize at first, but then be led back home by another way.
How about the labyrinths? Have you done some studies around that?
Well, I'm not so much a study person. I like the direct experience. Man, I want to get right to God. I don't want to. No, we're talking about God. I've done that long enough. Union. I want to go right to union. And the divine seems to like to slow me down. And say, yes, yes, yes. Here's union. There's union. Yeah, I've liked walking the labyrinth. It's kind of what you described about your field prayer. It's been given to me. And then there have been other times when it was nothing. And right now, I'm sort of like that. Like, I can't stand labyrinth. Set me on a labyrinth, and I want to get off. And I've done that. I've sort of deliberately experienced that with God. Well, can you be with me while I hate the labyrinth? And that was what was given. So there's a guy that was back in the early 1900s, 1920s, I think, Dom John Chapman. He wrote this wonderful book, Spiritual Letters. They're just letters, and somebody collected into a book. But that's his whole thing, is always a reminder of, this is the moment. I mean, here you are. What's the honest, your honest experience right now? That's where God is. You don't have to go off to some other place. It's just where you are. Can you laugh and let go of worrying about the fact that you worry? And so the labyrinth, I guess that's another roundabout way to respond. Mm-hmm. I've been up to Grace Cathedral, maybe you have too, in San Francisco, or inside and outside. That's been a great place. There's also a neat labyrinth at Ghost Ranch in Abiquiu, outside Abiquiu, New Mexico, which is a really wonderful place where George O'Keefe painted her paintings, and to walk there in the sort of the shadow of her mountain that she painted. That was a good thought for me. Have you been on labyrinths also? Have you walked?
Just some in Portland where I live, and I walked the one here. So.
Yeah. And that's been a
it's always been a really fantastic experience.
That's right.
Yeah.
You really get to use your body to be there, your whole self. Yeah.
And I think it's one way to quiet the noise while you're trying to pray, is because you're just putting one foot in front of another, and it just kind of quiets you down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And those thoughts that are chasing you get lost in there somewhere.
It's kind of like throwing a dog to a bone.
Yeah.
Chew on that bone thoughts while I am here present to God. Yeah. Other prayer forms that people have found particularly helpful or given to them? You mentioned the labyrinth and centering prayer. Prayers of, you know, forgiveness and worship and thanksgiving. There's a prayer dinner. It's coming up soon. I was joking with someone in the village last time I was here that, well, I just prayed a turn around, sit down prayer, which was, you know, it's when you go to the bathroom and you're completely freaked out. And sometimes I just take refuge in the restroom, and it's like, turn around, sit down, go to the bathroom. Oh, God, please help me with this. I'm really desperate. And that is a prayer. You know, that's it's everywhere. You can't get away from it.
Like young moms that go into the bathroom and lock it while she tries to gather her thoughts with the children that are outside the door pawing.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's the truth. Well, I have a few of these little reprints from the Poland Good Courage that I wrote last year, I think, about spiritual direction. So if you want one of those, you can. It's not very long. And you're welcome to And also in the bookstore, there are some books. There's a lot of books that are helpful. I'll just read one book that I have found very, very helpful. It's very simple. It's called Simply Sane, and it's by Gerald May. And it is about being free from fixing ourselves and being fixed, and instead just living simply in this moment. And if I was going to recommend one book, that would be it.
Simply what?
Simply Sane.
Sane.
Yeah.
What was the author's name again?
Gerald May. He died recently. He was a psychiatrist for 25 years with mentally ill people and prisoners, addicts, and then became the coordinator, the program person in this Chulain program that I was in. So he's a good person. Lots of good books, and he says that his other books are all really just him rewriting that book. We will, if you want to, meet anyone is welcome tomorrow at 3:45 in Chalet 7, where there's lots of big windows and cool views as well. And we'll pray together, I think, unless the Spirit leads otherwise, with the Lectio Divina. We'll do a simple introduction to that, and that some of you, if not all of you, are familiar with that. divine reading, praying with scripture. We'll have a short passage of scripture and listen for one word that comes up, and we'll be in silence together for long enough to be uncomfortable, but not so long that we run screaming from the room. And have a chance to talk about what that praying together is like. And we'll just be there about that. And we'll extend it to you. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
And thanks especially for talking to Sharon.
Somebody has a success hat?
It's Mark.
Thanks. Thanks for shutting the door at the beginning, too.
Oh, yeah. That would help us to focus.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Even without knowing what I was getting into, I thought, okay, after this session, somebody came on to sign up, I'll never get it.
Or maybe it's off of it.
But we're the ones screaming.
I'm Jan. You're Jan. I'm Marlene.
Where are you from?
Portland, Oregon.
Well, I'm going to take actually, I see it. She's been up here.
Good.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well,
thanks for
your smiling face. I'm always looking for one in the crowd. Oh, gosh.
I'm just so happy to be here. This is my first ever.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. How did you get here? What was your...
I came with Peter, his family, and me and my two kids. We drove up kind of together.
Huh.
Came up Friday, spent the night in Wenatchee, and then finished off the journey Saturday morning, got the early bird.
Oh, yeah.
It's just been
interesting. What do you think so far?
I love it.
Good.
It's very centering.
Oh, good.
It's lovely that there's things for kids to do, and then I can have a little time. And I wish my husband could be here, because he would love this too, but he wasn't able to get time off from work, so he just said go. The only thing that's hard is not being able to call him and talk to him, and tell him, day by day.
Yeah. And how old are your kids?
13 and 10.
Oh, and how are they liking it?
They're very happy. Daughter is mixing it up with Peter's family, but my son hasn't, until this morning, until the junior minor thing started, he didn't really know anybody. And I think we've been kind of having some mother-son time, which has been fun. We've been building cairns out there and on the river.
Is your son the one with the duct tape?
Yes.
Coat? Oh, my husband and I were saying, is that a duct tape coat? That is so great.
Yeah.
Did you both bring instruments?
Ben brought a saxophone. I brought a mandolin, which I don't know how to play, but I thought, I've got a week. I can surely come up with something in a week.
Well, because my husband's here.